WNYV Whitehall Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Thursday, March 7th. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe.
Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature plan to restore school aid that Governor Hochul proposed reducing when they released their budget proposals next week.
Almost half of the school districts in the state will be receiving less funding than they would have anticipated. We're very, very concerned about that.
The Lake Champlain Basin Program is hosting a talk tonight on the impact of last summer's rainstorms on the lake's water quality.
You know, we really have our eye on these types of extreme storms in the long term because we're expecting with climate change that the persistence and the frequency of these extreme storms will increase.
Plus, we'll meet multimedia artist Paul Anthony Smith and talk with him about his work currently on display in Glens Falls. All of that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Gray & Gray & Associates, CPAs, an accounting and financial services firm in Northern New York with offices in Canton, Potsdam, and Spring Hill, Florida. GrayCPAS.com and AdirondackExplorer.com and AdirondackAlmanac.com presenting daily updated news on public policy, environmental issues, and local communities in the Adirondack Park.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. Former Governor Andrew Cuomo has been subpoenaed to testify before Congress about his policies toward nursing homes during the pandemic. WSHU's Shelley Hasman-Kadish reports.
Congress is investigating Cuomo's decision to require nursing homes to accept residents who had tested positive for COVID-19 in spring of 2020. The House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic issued the subpoena. The Republican-led panel accuses Cuomo's policy of causing thousands of needless deaths and downplaying the impact. A spokesman for Cuomo, Richard Azzopardi, released a statement on X calling the subpoena a political stunt. He says Cuomo's counsel has offered to answer questions in writing and provided dates for interviews.
That was Shelley Hasman-Kadish reporting. New York's Assembly and Senate plan to restore school aid reductions proposed by Governor Kathy Hochul when they release their budget plans early next week. Karen DeWitt reports.
Hochul wants to make changes to what's known as the state's foundation aid formula. It's used for determining the distribution of state aid to schools. She would end the practice of hold harmless. That guarantees that no school district receives less money than it did the previous year. She also wants to alter the way inflation is calculated. It would result in less money for some schools this year. The proposal has drawn bipartisan opposition. Analysis by the Senate Democrats' fiscal team estimated schools could lose over $400 million in aid. Senate Leader Andrea Stork-Cousins says the reductions would have a massive impact on schools.
Almost half of the school districts in the state will be receiving less funding than they would have anticipated. We're very, very concerned about that.
Senate Education Chair Shelley Mayer spoke at a news conference that also included the Teachers Union, the School Boards Association, and the PTA, among others. She says lawmakers can't allow the cuts to go forward.
I am very confident that my colleagues in the Senate majority will stand to fully reject the cuts the governor has proposed.
Republicans, who are in the minority party in both houses, are also opposed. GOP Senator Jim Todisco, the ranking member of the Senate Education Committee and a former high school teacher, says students are still recovering from the effects of the pandemic and continue to need special mental health and other services initiated in the past couple of years.
We had a little something called COVID. Our kids sat in the kitchen, many of them, in front of a TV camera on a computer while their educators were miles away on another one. Didn't work. If you look at what happened, there's developmental backstepping.
Hochul is defending her proposals. She says for the past 2 years, there were record increases in school spending as she fulfilled a nearly two decades old court order to fully fund education. She says schools also benefited from one-time federal pandemic relief aid packages. She says no one should expect that level of spending to continue.
I assume rational people had understood that can't happen. So it is not a cut when you compare us to where we were before I took office, and it's still a huge increase. And so, but I understand the passions behind this. I understand the desire for people to stir this up.
Hochul says she is setting aside an additional $100 million to help make adjustments for schools that would lose significant funding under her plan if the hold harmless provision is ended. But she says the number of school-age children in the state is declining, and the school age should change accordingly.
Are we really going to be locked into a formula just because it has been done that way for a long time? And I'll never accept that as a satisfactory answer on how I do anything in state government.
Hochul's budget director, Blake Washington, in an interview with Public Radio, says his office and the Senate and Assembly fiscal committees recently reevaluated tax revenue collections. They found that the state has $1.3 billion more dollars coming in than originally anticipated. Washington says his office will be talking with lawmakers about potential restoration of school aid and other items.
Absolutely. And we'll be looking forward to working with the legislature to do just that.
The Senate and Assembly say they will present their budget plans on Monday. After that, they have 3 weeks until the budget is due on April 1st. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Assemblyman Robert Smullen announced yesterday that his young son, AJ, has died. AJ was hit by a car when he was outside playing with friends in Niskayuna near Albany a couple of weeks ago. After the accident, Smullen said on Facebook that his son had sustained a traumatic brain injury and was in critical condition. The Assemblyman posted again around 2:30 yesterday morning that AJ had succumbed to his injuries. There's been an outpouring of sympathy and support for Smullen and his family, including from Governor Hochul and Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. Smullen represents the 118th Assembly District, which includes portions of the Southern Adirondacks and the Mohawk Valley.
Clarkson University is transferring 16 graduate teaching programs to another college. Catherine Wheeler reports the programs are located at Clarkson's campus near Albany.
Siena College is taking over 16 of Clarkson's graduate teaching programs, including the Master's of Arts in Teaching. For now, the programs will stay housed at Clarkson's Capital Region campus in Schenectady. The change affects about 100 students and 8 full-time faculty and administrators, who will all be transferred to Siena. Clarkson acquired the programs from Union Graduate College in 2016. Clarkson spokeswoman Kelly Cheesham says they've been successful. The Master's of Arts teaching program has a 100% job placement rate and a 93% job retention rate after 5 years.
We have increased all of the enrollment in these graduate programs by a little over 30% since 2016.
Cheesham says it's a part of Clarkson's ongoing reorganization that will put the focus back on STEM degrees and cut down on costs. In December, the university announced it's phasing out 9 degrees in the humanities department.
As we look at this kind of STEM-focused future economy, part of those conversations also have to be, though, sometimes assessing what are we not going to do anymore in order to be able to devote our resources, our time, our energy, and best serve our students in what we're doing.
Colleges and universities in the North Country and across the U.S. are struggling with growing deficits and dropping enrollments, and many are having to downsize and refocus resources. Cheesham says Clarkson's next steps are about focusing on what programs they want to build as part of its vision for the university.
You're going to see some new academic offerings coming with digitally relevant programs in the liberal arts, I think, that are going to be emerging very soon.
Cheesham says the program transfer will likely happen in June. All of Clarkson's students will get to finish their degrees, but students who graduate after this May will have a Siena College diploma. Catherine Wheeler, North Country Public Radio.
Listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, a conversation with Paul Anthony Smith about his work on display at the Hyde in Glens Falls. That's in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Dan Duggan. A reminder that Northern Light is supported by Cronin's Golf Resort, a regional destination for golf, dining, and lodging in the Southern Adirondacks. Details at croninsgolfresort.com. By the way, today is North Country Public Radio's 56th birthday. Happy birthday to NCPR. Tag us, share your memories and birthday wishes on social media. How about a birthday gift to North Country Public Radio? Make your contribution right now, ncpr.org/give. Thanks.
Last summer's rainstorms brought severe flooding to parts of the North Country and much of Vermont. Dr. Matthew Vaughn is the Lake Champlain Basin Program's chief scientist, and he's giving a talk tonight that focuses on how the storms impacted the lake's water quality.
We do our best to collect water quality data and to look at the monitoring that we've done to try to make sense of the storm, try to learn from it for future events like this, and to see what the impacts might have been for our lake and our ecosystem.
Vaughn says the biggest concerns were untreated wastewater and excess stormwater flowing into the lake. He told Champlain Valley reporter Kara Chapman that there were already a number of monitoring programs in place to track the efforts.
We have what's called the Lake Champlain Long-Term Monitoring Program. That program is designed to sample water quality, you know, nearly every day throughout the warm seasons, throughout the lake and in our major rivers. So that was ongoing both before and after the flood, and in some cases during the flood as well, to try to capture what was going downstream in our major rivers. We also were lucky that we had piloted a real-time buoy monitoring network that was active in Mallets Bay and in the La Loyal River. So those buoys were sitting in the river and in the lake measuring water quality at every 15 minutes. We also have municipalities and beach managers who are monitoring water quality at public beaches and taking E. coli samples.
From all that data that was being collected, was there anything that stood out that was like surprising, concerning, and enlightening? Anything that you learned?
The first thing that was encouraging was that there was not, you know, widespread E. coli or bacterial contamination. There was some, you know, some elevated concerns here and there, especially, you know, right near the mouth of the Winooski River. And I think Plattsburgh had some elevated counts as well. But throughout this period, Burlington beaches had levels that were below public safety thresholds, and the contamination was not widespread there. We did track, you know, phosphorus contribution to Lake Champlain during this time. Phosphorus is a nutrient that can drive problems that we have in Lake Champlain and really around the world, like cyanobacteria growth, which can, you know, produce toxins in extreme cases. So that is something that was, you know, we analyzed in the weeks and months following the storm. And what we found is that, you know, not surprisingly, the storm contributed a great, you know, very high amount of phosphorus to the lake. You know, we really have our eye on these types of extreme storms in the long term. because we're expecting with climate change that the persistence and the frequency of these extreme storms will increase.
Did you get a sense of, you know, what Lake Champlain can or can't handle when it comes to extreme weather, since, like you said, storms like this could become more frequent due to climate change?
Yeah, and you know, there's certainly a concern in the short term when you have a lot of this phosphorus delivery that, you know, the season will be impacted by this amount of phosphorus. But the lake is a really big system, and it can handle, you know, episodic events like this. Our watershed has seen large storms for many, many years. The lake did kind of rebound or recover in a matter of weeks, and the season for cyanobacteria or other types of things in the lake was not terribly unusual for the rest of the summer. The concern, though, is overall, when you have a trend of more storms like this over time, it can work against our efforts to reduce phosphorus. And that's something that we're keeping in mind as we go about our restoration efforts. We need to design solutions that will be resilient to increasing storms, more powerful storms in the future.
Have any of those solutions, I guess, been identified yet? What are you doing to try and figure out what they are or implement them, Dr. Vaughn?
Yeah, absolutely. So as an example, the Lake Champlain Basin Program and our partners are looking to quantify the benefits of floodplain restoration and wetland restoration, and then target where the most advantageous parcels might be to preserve and restore those areas. Because when you have a flood, a part of the problem is that our rivers have, in some cases, have been disconnected from these systems, from the floodplains and from surrounding wetlands. So they are not able to spread out and slow down like they naturally would. So when you are able to protect and restore these, you know, riverside floodplains and wetlands, the floodwaters can really dissipate, move out, slow down, and sink into the landscape rather than, you know, moving down and powerfully eroding the landscape and delivering the sediment and phosphorus to the lake.
That was Dr. Matthew Vaughn speaking with Champlain Valley reporter Kara Chapman. He's giving a talk tonight titled Exploring Water Quality Impacts of the July 2023 Storm in the Lake Champlain Basin. Folks can attend in person at the Lake Champlain Basin Program's office in Grand Isle, Vermont, or tune in via Zoom. We have more information about that on our website, ncpr.org.
There's still time to register to vote in New York's presidential primary. Saturday, March 23rd is the last day for voters to get their registration forms to their local boards of elections by mail or in person. Early voting starts that day and runs through March 30th. Those who want to vote by absentee ballot have until Monday, April 1st to apply in person. Primary day is Tuesday, April 2nd.
Police in Clinton County on Tuesday arrested the owner of an animal shelter from which dozens of dogs were seized last week. 57-year-old Hillary Davis of Peru was charged with 6 felony forgery charges and 48 misdemeanor counts of animal cruelty. Davis owned a shelter in Beekman Town called a Canine Gem. Police seized 49 dogs there last week, one of whom has since been euthanized. Davis allegedly failed to provide proper sustenance and shelter to the dogs. Police say she also forged documents. Davis was arraigned in Beekman Town Court and released on her own recognizance. She's due back in court at a later date to face the charges.
The hospital in Malone plans to add a new building to its campus. According to the Malone Telegram, Alice Hyde Medical Center officials want the new building to house a Hudson Headwaters primary care facility. Hudson Headwaters opened offices in Malone in December. The newspaper reports that the new building would be more than double the size of Hudson Headwaters' current space. Once completed, it would provide behavioral health services, family medicine, and potentially a pharmacy. The goal is to open the facility by late 2025 or early 2026.
We'll be right back.
listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a minute, landscape, home, and dreams deferred at the Hyde Collection. We have a conversation in just a couple of minutes. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note, how tree swallows spend their winter. That's just ahead at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Some scattered showers in Glens Falls and Lake George today. Otherwise, partly cloudy skies across the region. Highs in the upper 40s, winds out of the north-northeast, 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs upper 40s, low 50s. And then through the weekend, scattered showers possible both Saturday and Sunday, a high in the 40s on Saturday and highs upper 30s, low 40s on Sunday. Maybe a light wintry mix early Sunday morning. And then early next week, partly cloudy both Monday and Tuesday, highs upper 30s, low 40s. Right now, 38 degrees here in Canton.
The current art exhibit at the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls deals with colonialism, displacement, and a sense of home. Paul Anthony Smith is a multimedia artist. He was born in Jamaica and migrated to the U.S. when he was 9 and is now based in New York City.
And much of my work really revolves around my existence as being a human coming from the Caribbean and learning about where I'm from while being in a totally different place. And so I'm making work that really looks at history and how we think about history, but how do we try to continue to uplift each other? And I guess for me, it's more so trying to keep that vibrancy of what home was.
Much of his work features images of new Americans from the Caribbean and shaping American culture. That's expressed in his series Dreams Deferred, which is titled after Langston Hughes' poem of the same name.
What happens to a dream deferred? The poem reads, does it dry up like a raisin in the sun or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode?
I caught up with Smith recently, and he started off by describing a piece from that series that's on display at the Hyde called Dreams Deferred, number 55.
It's a painting of a landscape which functioned as a garden, and it's, you know, we're looking through a fence, and behind that fence is another fence. And behind that fence is this garden with these beautiful flowers that are sort of close but far because of the distance between you. So the fence is in the periphery, and you're unable to touch those flowers because you're pushed away, you're pushed back. And so I think about these fence and these gardens often because that's how New York City seems, you know. Everything seems like there's an obstacle to obtaining them, but when you do, you have to maintain what you have. It's owning space. And what is that space? You know, now I'm an immigrant living abroad, and I'm looking into this window and trying to understand what's happening because I'm now living a different life and would like to be in that same environment that those people are enjoying that moment. Sort of like those moments of leisure.
But it feels like there's not really actual access to those things.
Right, because I feel so I'm so distant from where home is, and I think that's why I put those gates over them, because it's how do we think about access? How do we gain access? You know, if the gate was a bit more open or had sort of an entryway in, it would feel a bit unique. And so I think about just home often. You know, sometimes I get kind of complacent. I look up flights, the cost of flights to take off for a couple of days.
Smith frequently uses a technique that was traditionally used in textiles called picotage, and it all starts with a bright photograph that he paints on top of.
So it's kind of a relief that, you know, presses up against fabric to create sort of different patterns. It's often used in a lot of floral patterns. And for me, I'm using it in a way where I'm picking into the surface of a photograph where there's an underlying softer material, which is a museum board. And so I'm using a sharp tool to pick in and pull up the surface of the photograph, that which gives sort of like a textured Velcro-like surface that will able to create a new image on the top layer of the photograph. So it's a new surface that's raised. And I think I'm still learning about this surface that I've been working with for the past, I would say, over 10 years. It's more like a sculpted paper, sculpting with paper.
For attendees of the exhibit, what are you hoping they get out of it?
I'm hoping that the attendees at the exhibit come away with a new perspective of the Caribbean and what that place is. You know, oftentimes we hear negative things in the news, but there's other aspects of it. I want them to, you know, have a feeling of awe when they leave, when they come into the exhibit.
Paul Anthony Smith is a multimedia artist based in New York City. His exhibit, Passage, is on display now at the Hyde Museum in Glens Falls. You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Monica Sandresky here with Todd Moe. Before we head off for the day, we want to give a listen to a little bit of music from the group Drank the Gold. This Saratoga Springs-based group is performing tomorrow night at Tawny in Canton as part of their Cabin Fever series. And this is their song, Opossum Awareness. Drank the Gold. They're a group based in Saratoga Springs, and they are performing tomorrow night from 7 to 9 at Tawny in Canton. You can find out more at tawny.org.
That's it for Northern Light on this Thursday, March 7th.
Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then join us this afternoon for more acoustic and bluegrass music that that you can only hear right here on North Country Public Radio. String Fever with Barb Heller. That's from 3 to 5 right here on NCPR. I'm Monica Sandresky.
I'm Todd Moe. Be well.